Hello to everyone tuning in. I'm Carmen, and you're listening to My Horse Heart. Today, I have the pleasure of being joined by Sylvain Im. Sylvain is an advanced EponoQuest instructor, which is how we know each other. As I've been going through the process of becoming an instructor as well, Sylvain has been our small group leader, helping my apprenticeship group develop the skills needed for equine-facilitated learning. Sylvain is also a doctor of homeopathic medicine, living and practicing in France. As if that isn't impressive enough, he very recently had a book published, Les Chants Sacrés du Cheval, L'Approche Traditionnelle du Cheval par les Indiens Navajo, which translates to Sacred Songs of the Horse, the Traditional Approach to Horses by the Navajo. It's available on Amazon. Thank you for joining me today, Sylvain.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, as you said, I'm a medical doctor, and I've been practicing as a medical doctor for more than 30 years now. And I began with homeopathic medicine. Actually, I never practiced well general medicine. I was very much in alternative things. And now, since I would say 10, 15 years, I'm more in a kind of a holistic medicine that also involved connection to nature, animals, and especially horses. And I did several trainings to introduce connection to horses in my healing work, in my work as a healer, as a medical doctor. And so that's the reason why I came here in Arizona to meet my teacher, Linda Kohanoff, which is a wonderful person. And she was part of this training, and she was also the reason why I connected with the Navajo tribe, and maybe I will talk a little bit more later on in the interview.
Fantastic. That's amazing. And what a journey, and really unusual to hear about that from my experience. So I really enjoy hearing you talk about it, and I learned so much from you.
Well, thank you.
So I've done my best to describe what it means for me to have a horse heart in my blog, My Horse Heart and Yours. What does it mean living with a horse heart or even by your heart to you?
Yeah, and because I was trying so hard to help people and to heal people, and I was really feeling in my heart that to really heal, we should come back to harmony, actually, and the harmony is very much hidden somewhere in our own heart, and when I began, well, my name is Sylvain, and it means from the forest, actually, and that's really who I am. I'm a guy from the forest. I feel very, you know, safe and in harmony and in connection with nature when I'm in a forest, and I'm living in a forest. It's south of Paris, between Paris and Chartres, and I'm living in a big oak forest. And that's the place where I really feel in harmony and in connection with nature. So when I studied this work with horses, actually I got insights from the horses themselves that. To really become who we are and to heal ourselves, we got to go back in our center, in our heart. We got to slow down. That's a very important thing, because our thinking process, our thinking brain, well, it is thinking all the time, and it's thinking very fast. And there is also, you know, our self-criticism, like a voice in our brain who always, you know, judges and criticizes what we are doing. But when we go in the heart, in the sacred space of the heart, well, that's something different. And then we can slow down, stop all this, cluttering thoughts, and get back to a silent space which was in us all the time. And that's something that the horses really taught me, actually. They learned me how to get, how to contact this sacred space of the heart.
What a great answer. And I completely relate. I really feel that way around horses as well. How do you think that aspect of the wisdom of the heart that you just described so nicely, how has that affected your decisions going into medical school, for instance, or throughout this amazing path that you've described for us?
Yeah, well, you know, medical school and university is not always getting back to harmony. And now the medical system, and I'm not going to talk about the medical system because it's, of course, it's very useful, especially if you break your leg or something, you know, you got something that has to be taken care of as an urgency, and the medical system is very much the right thing to get into. But to restore harmony, that's something else, actually. That's something else. So to restore harmony, this is more a holistic approach. And that's very much what the traditional medicines were saying, that it's more about the state of being and the presence, and the presence within our heart, actually. And that's a real important healing factor, I think. So I would say that, of course, the medical system is very useful, and the hospital system is very useful, but it is also useful to have a space that allows us to come back to harmony.
Absolutely. So what challenges did you have to confront along the way as you were trying to follow your heart, searching for this harmony, balancing holistic and the Western medicine?
Yeah. Well, first, I think the first challenge I had to overcome is that our thinking brain is speaking all the time. So the communication is very much verbal, with words and concepts, and it's very much in our brain, actually. And it's kind of disconnected to reality, because it has been proven that emotional intelligence and our inner feeling eventually is what makes us do choices in life. Not our logical brain, but our feelings, what our emotional state. And so I believe, as Linda Kohanov says it in her Ipona Quest training, that if we get to a nonverbal level, and if we reach the emotional intelligence skills, then we access a whole different level. And this was a challenge for me, because I was trained in the university as with concepts, with mental concepts. So I really had to learn by experience with horses and with practicing that the state of being is the most important, and the emotional state, the emotional intelligence is what is important. So this was a big challenge for me, actually.
That's really amazing to recognize that it's our internal challenge that can sometimes be the strongest.
Yeah.
And actually take the steps to work on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I strongly believe that what lives in our heart, in our being, is kind of shaping the reality outside of us. And they are kind of resonating. And because I had this connection with a Native American world, and I wouldn't say it's an initiation. It's just, you know, Native American have a culture. They have a specific point of view, and they have a specific world, I mean a culture, and they're trying to keep it. And it's not an initiation. It's only that as a white people, we have our own culture, and it's very much Occidental. And the Native American culture is different. That's all. And it has a very strong sense of a connection and a brotherhood and sisterhood. And when, for instance, I heard the word Mother Earth, that, you know, you always hear about Mother Earth in all kind of shamanic workshops. But Mother Earth also means that your mother is living, actually, and she's with you. And they always told me, you don't need to do very complicated ceremonials, because your grandmother is the earth, and she's here, actually, and she's here to help you. So if you really need help, you would ask for help as if you would ask something to your own grandmother. And of course, your grandmother loves you, and she wants you to succeed, and she wants you to have everything that you need, and she wants you to have abundance, and she wants you to be happy. So your grandmother will give all of you, she will give you what you need, actually, if you ask for it. But sometimes your grandmother is wise, so she knows that she wouldn't give you certain things, like, you know, you wouldn't give too much candies to your grandson, because it's not good for his teeth. So it's the same with Mother Earth. She wouldn't give you certain things because she knows it's not good for you. But it was a very strong insight. And it's not a shamanic initiation again. It's just that I was aware of the relationship we have with our Earth. And we don't own the Earth. We are part of her family, and that's very different.
So when you've had challenges come up that are external in your life, whether it's people or forces who are, you know, maybe trying to push you in other directions or control you or, you know, whatever they're trying to do, is that how you are able to overcome those challenges?
Yeah, well, I don't know really how to answer this one, because, of course, actually, we are all brothers and sisters. We are all united in our heart, right? And we all experience the same feelings and the same things in our heart. But in our shape, I mean, in our bodies, we are separated one from another. And because we are separated, then you have feelings of frustration and sadness when somebody goes away, and jealousy also, and all these, you know, bad feeling that you can have, even considering that we are all one. So it's kind of paradox, actually, because we are all one, but we are all separated. It's kind of paradoxical. So, I was told that we should always remember that we are one in our heart, but because we have separated bodies and shapes and forms, then we have also our own space that has to be protected. So the protection is always very important. And that's something we learn with horses too, because when we are with horses, we really have to set boundaries and to have a safe space around us. And Carmen, you know this very well because you are a farrier. So you know that you definitely need to have this safety space around you. Even if you would be, you would have a very strong connection heart to heart with the horse, but still. So, yeah, those challenges are very much, you know, between unity and protection. Yeah. And the safety space that that sometimes we have to set boundaries.
Yeah, people and horses.
People and horses, yes, absolutely.
For sure. So did you have a lot of these points of view before you started your work with the Navajo and Linda as well?
Well, I learned a lot of things with Linda, and she's a wonderful person, and she's a very knowledgeable person, and she's been doing this work for years and years. So, and this book, The Way of the Horse with the Cards, and it's work with equine archetypes, and I learned a lot, and I'm still using these archetypes in my workshops, of course, and with this connection with the Navajo. Well, the first thing I learned from them, and because they told me, well, you are, you know, you white people are coming to see the Native Americans, and you want to, many of you want to become a Native American, and many of you would say, well, you know, I was a Native American in a past life, but we as Native American, we don't believe in past life. We have only one life, and we are always in the present moment, so it doesn't. We don't care too much to what we were before, or you know. And they told me that everybody is a Native person, and everybody has you know his own culture and his own roots and can be grounded in his or her own culture. And for instance, the place where I live, which is between Paris and Chartres in France, they had a sacred forest there, and it was the sacred forest of the Druids, you know, the Druids. And actually they would worship the goddess Epona, which is a horse goddess. And so actually I'm living in the center of this mythical space with the goddess, with the horse goddess Epona, actually. And I didn't know it. And when I met these native people, and of course they have very elaborate ceremonies and a lot of singing and dances and a lot of things. They know how to connect with their environment. But I also learned that I should connect with my own environment. Yeah, and I think that's the main message they have, that our own life is also a mythical life, legendary life. It has elements that are sacred, and we don't really need to take over a culture that is not ours. And we certainly do not need to become Native American, and we can't actually, because it's not our culture. And you know, I speak some Navajo, but I will never speak, you know, fluently Navajo. It's really, really hard to speak. So, and I don't have to. Yeah. So. Yeah,
so that's how did you go from that to writing a whole book about them?
Yeah.
And your own experiences there.
Yeah, because what I experienced is that in order to remember who we are, sometimes we need another person who says, remember, who says, know who you are. And because the Navajo have kept for centuries and centuries this legend of the horse, and I discovered this legend of the horse, and actually it was published. Everything I say in this book was already published. And there, the Navajo religion has been studied for almost one century now. So, pretty much everything has been published. But when I heard them talking about this legend of the horse and how they would consider that the horse was a sacred being, then I wanted to share this, and also to share it in connection with my own culture. As a French person living near a sacred forest, you know, and to put the two of them in perspective, And that's what I'm trying to do in that book, actually. And the publisher asked me to write about Native American ceremonies. And I told him, no, I can't do that, because those ceremonies are sacred. And they are not, you know, they are not made to be put in a book, or they are sacred. They have to remain sacred. And but instead, I took some elements that everybody could himself create a ceremony or some act that you could do to improve your connection with the horse. Yeah, on the main elements of the Navajo legend of the horse is that the horse was already a sacred being. Even the scientific say that there were no horse in the United States because they are supposed to have disappeared 15,000 years ago. But the natives don't agree with that. They say that actually there were horses in the Turtle Island, in the Americas, in the very remote spaces, and they speak about the origin Appaloosa, I think is the name, Foundation Appaloosa, which was a very small horse, like a very small pony.
Yeah.
And when the Spanish people brought the horses in, and those horses were stolen for some of them by the native people, the Comanche and the Apache. And then they bred with those Appaloosa, and it gave birth to the Mustang. But what the natives said is that in fact the spirits knew that the tribes would need a way of transportation, and first the people would travel on rainbows. It was their first way of transportation. So they say that in ancient time, people could just, you know, travel on rainbow on very long distances.
What beautiful imagery.
Yeah, that's not an imagery, actually. Mm-hmm. And I heard stories that maybe 100 years ago or two centuries years ago, people would have special singings, and they would have a rainbow appear, and they would cross a canyon, for instance, and just, you know, flying on the rainbow and go on the other side of the canyon, which seems kind of crazy, but that's what they say. But after a moment, those people made, they used black magic, actually. And because of black magic, they lost these powers. And then the spirits said, well, now the humans have no way of transportation. They can't travel on the rainbow anymore. And we should provide them with some way of transportation. And they said that they decided that they would bring the horses in the four directions. And there is a legend of the horses of the four directions that I'm explaining in the book. Yeah. And that's how the horses was created. The physical horse was created. Because the native people needed a way of transportation. Yeah. Yeah. And it's a little part of the, you know, the big legend of the horse. There is so many stories about it. And it's just fascinating, actually.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, regardless of our listeners' beliefs or spiritual or religious orientations, I think, you know, what you just described can be a fantastic metaphor for our day-to-day life, you know, when we let black magic in whatever form that is in our reality, have a power, then we really lose on some of the beauty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it was because of selfishness, actually. And when I act selfish, and, you know, when my ego is kind of driving me, then I will lose my authentic power. And that's what you said with the horse heart, and it's also about giving.
Yes.
Giving or not taking.
Absolutely. Wow. That's wonderful. I really look forward to reading your book. And for our listeners, we're hoping there's going to be an English translation one day.
Yeah.
But until then, I know that we have some friends and family in Montreal who might be tuning in. So time to practice our French and order Sylvain's book.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, for sure. So if you went back to when you were first starting medical school, could you have imagined the path that your life took?
Well, certainly not. Because my path was very much to become an intern and then to work all my life in a hospital. So no, I couldn't imagine this at all. And it was also because I said yes to the unknown, and I kind of jumped into the unknown.
And what gave you the courage to do that?
Well, I don't know. Maybe curiosity. I don't know, actually.
Yeah.
Because I was not satisfied with the explanation I had. Mm. So I wanted to know a more global explanation, probably.
What do you think is ahead for you in the future?
Well, I don't know.
Any desires or goals or aspirations?
Yeah, there are many goals. I'm doing workshops in Europe all this year, and I'm going in Belgium to have a workshop, and it's horse. The name of the workshop is Horses, Spirits of the Fire, and Songs of the Earth, and it will be in Belgium. Next week, actually.
Fantastic.
And then other workshops, my I don't know where I'm going to. You know, and, you never know what to experience, and it's always better to be right in the present. And Linda says in her book about the two times, she said that the Greeks had a time that is flowing from A to B, and that would be Chronos, and that's very much the time that we calculate with our computers, our watches, you know, and that's the Chronos time. But there is another time, and that's the Kairos time, and that's for the Greek it was a time about opportunities, you know, the right moment. And the right moment would be any time, actually. I'm very much trying to be in that Kairos time, you know, the time for the right moment. So I don't know what tomorrow will be. I will be in a plane probably tomorrow because I'm going back to France. But you never know. And sometimes you have opportunities I'm here because of those opportunities, actually.
Me too.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Is there anything that you'd like to say to our listeners?
Well, I would like to say that horses are not only here to be, you know, toys or sport animals, but they are teachers, they are companions, they have much more emotional intelligence than we think, actually. And they have a language, so maybe some people heard about, you know, those languages with natural horsemanship, but they really have a language, and it's on the emotional level. So, yeah, I would like to say that if you have a horse, please consider that your horse might have opinions, and this horse might have a language. He might actually try to communicate with you. So
wonderful! Thank you so much for speaking with me today, Sylvain.
Well, it was a pleasure being here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in. Till next time on My Horse Heart.